I'm Arun Van Gogh Paul in for Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. Across the globe, the spread of coronavirus shows no signs of slowing down. This week, Chinese health officials reported that more than 40,000 people have been infected globally. The death toll is also on the rise, with more than 1,000 reported dead so far. The majority of those cases are in China, where everyday life is at a standstill. In an effort to contain the coronavirus, Chinese authorities have implemented mass quarantines across central China, specifically around the city of Wuhan and the Hubei province, where the virus first broke out. A government-imposed lockdown in the region has restricted transportation, and people are being encouraged to remain in their homes. Plus, many businesses and schools are still closed across China. But despite the quarantine, the number of confirmed infections continues to climb daily. At the same time, a different kind of quarantine is taking place online. The Chinese government has been working to suppress discussion of the outbreak since late December, when people first started posting about it across the internet. For more on this, we're joined by two journalists who've recently been quarantined: Stephen McDonald, Beijing-based correspondent with the BBC, and Sean Li, China-based correspondent for the Wall Street Journal. Thanks to you both for coming back on the program.
Hi, Arun.
Good to talk to you.
Now, both of you have personally been under quarantine during this outbreak. Sean, let's start with you. How did you get out of quarantine?
So I was in quarantine in China in Hubei province for 12 days. And essentially, the local authorities told us that the quarantine was going to be extended indefinitely. And the only way out of the city where we were and out of Hubei province was to take the American evacuation flight out of Wuhan. So that's what we did with me and a colleague last Friday. So now I'm in quarantine again in the U.S. at Travis Air Force Base for another 14 days in Northern California.
And how do the conditions compare from China to where you are right now?
It's very different. So in China, we weren't allowed to leave our rooms because at a certain point, they were afraid that we were actually infected, even though our temperatures were normal. So in the U.S., we're allowed to leave our rooms. You know, we're allowed to go outside on the hotel grounds. We're on the airbase in a hotel, and but they put up temporary barricades around the hotel grounds, guarded by U.S. marshals in case we go stir crazy and make a run for it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a striking difference between the two.
And did you feel stir crazy at any points during this last few weeks?
In China, definitely, because we were confined to our rooms and we were there for over a week. So even though it was a very nice hotel, you kind of get sensory deprivation for not having seen or spoken to anyone else for over a week.
Stephen, you were just released from quarantine in Beijing, correct? How was your experience different?
So what happened to us is we went into Hubei province from Hunan. That's a neighboring province. We wanted to go in that way because we knew that these sort of lockdowns were starting. And we thought if we have a car that's got Hubei plates, it's going to restrict us. So we went to Hunan, hired a car and drove in. Now, on the way in, apart from going past, you know, the more and more serious roadblocks as you approach Hubei, we went in sort of via a back street. I think we thought it would be pretty easy to go down this dirt road and sneak into this province. But even there was a police roadblock and they were like, oh, well, you can go in, but we're not going to let you back out again. And at this point, we realized they were going to lock down all of Hubei. This is 60 million people, effectively, you know, you're locking down the entire population of Italy. And, you know, we nevertheless pressed on and drove through various ghost town-like places with nobody on the streets and some small cities there. And we ended up at one place where we're at a hospital and interviewing a patient on the inside via a phone app who told us he was pretty worried because he'd gone into the hospital. He had a temperature, but he thought he didn't necessarily have the coronavirus when he went in, but he thought he might catch it anyway because they'd stuck him in this ward with other coronavirus patients. And so he sort of inevitably thought he is going to end up being infected. Anyway, at this point, the police turn up and some local government officials, and they didn't want us to be there in their town and reporting. They sort of wanted us to move on, and we're saying, well, look, you know, really, we wanted to go back to Hunan at some point, but you know, we can't go back there now. It's locked down. And at this point, they decided, well, they'd rather breach their own quarantine rules than have a team of pesky journalists hanging around there. And so we had a police escort, lights flashing and everything, and they drove us back across out of Hubei, and that's how we got out of that province and ended up returning to Beijing. Now, anybody who's been in Hubei is advised to be in quarantine for 2 weeks. So we just decided to do it anyway. Like my boss said, you know, stay at home for 2 weeks. But it's funny, the response to this in all aspects of this emergency, it differs from city to city. So two of my colleagues went back to Shanghai. Now in Shanghai, they've been much more strict on journalists there. They had police and medical teams knocking on the door, making them sign documents. You will not leave your home for 2 weeks, etc. In Beijing, it hasn't been like that. I just got a call from the foreign ministry. Oh, I heard you've been there. Are you sick? You're staying at home. Okay, look after yourself. See you later. So it just depends where you end up in terms of how strict it is.
Sean, the Wall Street Journal, your paper, had a headline stating that President Xi inspected a hospital after, quote, a conspicuous absence. Has his absence had political reverberations?
Yes. I mean, he hasn't been seen publicly at any sort of hospital or talking to patients. He actually dispatched the premier to Wuhan a few weeks ago to visit hospitals and speak to infected patients and medical workers. So the fact that he hasn't shown his face in the front lines of the outbreak has been very conspicuous, especially as public anger has surged over the weeks with how the government has been handling it. And last week, when that young doctor in Wuhan, the whistleblower doctor, Li Wenliang, died from after being infected with coronavirus, there was just a huge outpouring online of people questioning where was the government, how were they handling or mishandling the outbreak.
And so how has the government responded to this anger?
So they have aggressively censored a lot of people's comments online. The censors have been working overtime. And on the other hand, they've also been sending more higher level health experts to Hubei and to Wuhan. So just yesterday, Hubei province ousted two top level provincial health officials and actually replaced them with a veteran health official from the National Health Commission. So it appears like they're bringing in more experts also. The team from the WHO landed in China yesterday to help the government's response. So those are sort of two aspects of what they're doing.
Stephen, the BBC has a graph showing that cases are beginning to drop in China based on data from the China National Health Commission. How significant is this information?
Well, let's assume for the moment that at least in trend terms, that these official figures mean something. And they've been heavily criticized, the figures, for not catching all the cases. And even the government knows they're not going to catch all the cases. Of course they're not. But, okay, let's say that at least in trend terms, they show a pattern. Over the last week, especially outside of Hubei province, the numbers are not growing at the same extent. In fact, the graph's going the other way. It's a bumpy line, but it's heading down. So it does seem to suggest that these very strict measures, which are stopping people from moving around the country, are kind of kicking in and that it is working. I mean, in Beijing, for example, there are only a couple of hundred cases here, and yet very strict measures now in place. Like every housing compound, unless you live there, you can't go in. So in theory, you're not supposed to have a friend over to your house to have dinner or something like that. It's very strict. And on the streets now, you know, once I came out of quarantine, I'm wandering around having a bit of a look. There are no cars. There are hardly any people. Those who are outside, of course, have got face masks on. Most people, if they have a choice, won't leave home. And many companies have said simply to people to work from home, or they've introduced kind of staggered working arrangements. So not everybody crowds into the subway at the same time, or not everybody is on a public bus at the same time, and therefore, and thereby, you're restricting people's exposure to this potentially deadly virus.
But obviously, many people simply can't go to their workplace or work remotely. If you have thousands of people in any given city who are otherwise would be serving as, say, restaurant workers, and they're not doing that, is this taking a significant hit on the Chinese economy?
Yeah, well, I mean, imagine that it take an enormous hit. The Chinese economy is getting pounded by this. But I should add, with restaurants, they're kind of exempt. So food or some sort of other, like emergency services, electricity, water, this type of stuff, you're supposed to be still going to work to keep people nourished and alive, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, imagine every little small business that's struggling from week to week to survive, or some itinerant laborer who lives in a small town, has traveled to a big city to maybe work in a factory. The factory's not open. He doesn't have any pay. How does he pay his rent? You know, for the factory owner, how does he keep all that, the staff there, the factory, you know, operating without, you know, being able to get supplies from another factory that isn't open? It's huge. It's enormous. And this is why people are really hoping that there is some sort of turning point coming. But I don't know. I think it could take many months, to tell the truth.
And Sean, you've been, I guess, taking note of incidents of xenophobia and racism happening to people who are either Chinese or simply appear Asian happening abroad, correct?
Yes. Actually, in taking the evacuation flight, many of the people on the flight said, you know, we're nervous not just because we came from Wuhan and there's a stigma attached to that, but just because we are ethnically Chinese. And one woman said, you know, I'm afraid of my child being bullied at school, if especially if anyone knows that he's been to Wuhan, but also just because he is ethnically Chinese. And that's a worry among a lot of people, I think, that I've spoken to, Americans heading back.
Yeah, and I mean, do we see governments abroad taking aggressive measures to kind of combat that sort of xenophobia, or are they really more scared about the spread of the disease?
I think at this point, they're more scared about the spread and trying to contain it and instituting travel bans and other regulations like that.
How long should we expect the quarantines to last, Sean?
Well, at this point, in the U.S., they've evacuated all of the people from Hubei that I think are wanted to be evacuated. So, you know, the quarantine is 14 days unless you actually are infected, right? And then they might reconsider close contacts. So we're all going to be out of here within less than 2 weeks. In China, you know, who knows? The city where I was stuck, they told us that it could last for months, which is actually amazing considering to consider a big city like that in lockdown.
Sean Lee is a China-based correspondent for The Wall Street Journal, and Stephen McDonnell is a Beijing-based correspondent for the BBC. Thanks to you both for joining us.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.